Introducing the new low-fat Subway Buffalo Chicken. Spicy chicken, cool light ranch, one hot sandwich. All the flavor you love with 7 grams of fat. For a limited time, hurry to Subway and enjoy the newest part of a Subway Fresh Fit meal. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, welcome to the BS Report. It's a sunny Monday afternoon here in Southern California. Great to be back home. I was on the road for the last 2 weeks promoting my book, The Book of Basketball, available at Amazon.com and some bookstores. We did not print enough, and we are working on that as we speak. I have a signing today at LA Live at the ESPN Zone in Los Angeles, if you're around. Starts at 4:45, runs until the Clipper game, and we will have books there. I will sign them, and there you go. So we're going to delve into the football season today because I cannot figure the football season out. So who better to help us figure out than Mike Lombardi from the National Football Post and NFL Network and Aaron Schatz, the head of footballoutsiders.com. They're going to help us figure out the season because I can't. First up, on the Subway Fresh Take hotline, you know him, you love him. It's the year of Lombardi. Mr. Mike Lombardi, what's happening?
Hey, Bill, how are you? Nice to hear from you.
Well, I'm sorry this was short notice, but there are two problems here. One was that I didn't realize I was going to have the window to record the podcast today. This is exciting. And two, I cannot figure out this NFL season. I officially think this is one of the weirdest seasons we've had. If you had to bet your life on one of these teams to win the Super Bowl, who would you pick?
I just can pick one.
Only one. You have to bet your life. You have to bet your life.
My life to win the Super Bowl. I'm going to go the Colts.
Wow. Even with that crappy run game and all the secondary injuries.
Well, I think when they get Donald Brown back, that really helps them. He's a key component to what they need to do. He's a better runner, more instinctive back than Joseph Addai. And the fact that their best player, Peyton Manning, and their other best player might win the defensive MVP of the league and the offensive MVP of the league makes me think they're the best team.
You are not buying the Saints at all, doing a 99 Rams routine of never having to play outdoors and rolling through the league and just kind of sneaking it through and then playing in Miami at 75 degrees outside, never having to actually win a big game in cold weather?
You know, I like the Saints, but, you know, you asked me to put my life on the line. I'm not ready to do it for them. I mean, yesterday was a perfect game that easily should have been one that they lost. I mean, the Panthers would build the lead up, and then all of a sudden they went into four corners. I thought they were Princeton playing Penn back in 65. I mean, they just stalled the game the whole time.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. You know, 3rd and 14, let's run a draw. You know, it's like you got to keep trying to score when you play the Saints, and when they play teams that know how to keep scoring effectively, I think the injury factor has taken its toll on the Saints, just like it has on the Colts. But the Colts are used to playing with some of those guys without some of those guys on defense.
Wait a second. You said the Saints were racked with injuries. What were those big injuries in your opinion?
Well, yesterday they play without Cedric Ellis. Kendrick Clancy, their two starting defensive tackles, are both not in the game. Now, Tony Hargrove's a very good player, but the Panthers effectively ran the ball on him, something I thought they would do going in the game. Now, you know, I think that lack of defense, and then they lose Jabari Greer midway through the game. I don't know how serious this injury is going to be. So they lose three real important players to their defense. I don't know how long they can withstand that over the test of time. Certainly it's not going to be a factor when they play the Rams this week.
And you're talking about, you know, the Saints clearly should have lost the Miami game. And I think Miami lost that game because for whatever reason, they decided to keep attacking and throwing the ball deep to their crappy receivers, which made no sense. And then yesterday in Carolina, as you said, you know, they went into the four corners and they did not try to win that game in the second half at all. Nobody actually ever found the balance between those two styles, it didn't seem like.
Yeah, and you know, the problem is when you build a lead up too early against the Saints, it's like building a lead against the Lakers in the first quarter. Does it really mean anything? You know they're going to make a run at you. And when you look at that Dolphin game, the Dolphins scored 28 points on 9 plays. They scored. I know this sounds ridiculous, but they scored too fast.
Yeah.
And to beat the Saints, you got to score, but eat up a lot of clock, and they couldn't do that. And then they got in the fourth quarter, and they kind of got out of their element, lost who they were. Plus, you know, we find now when the Dolphins defense plays longer than 28 minutes, they're not very effective.
Right. So looking at the Saints schedule, do they have like any? You know, it seems to me like they're a classic. If they weren't in the dome, cold weather, grind it out type of game, that they're just not built for that. Do they even have any of those in the schedule?
No, they don't. You know, I mean, they're pretty well home free. Next week, St. Louis. Then they play New England at home, obviously. And, of course, they have to go to Carolina, which they have to go to Tampa. They haven't even played Tampa yet. They, you know, this is the second half of the season. They haven't played Tampa yet.
Ugh.
So, you know, that's two wins there. And, you know, that makes them 10-0. And then they have Carolina on the road. They have Atlanta on the road. And so, it's not going to be a difficult – and they got St. Louis. So, you know, they're in that prime position. And ultimately, that's a good thing for them because if some of these guys are not out for the season, they can keep accumulating wins while their players get healthy, which is the greatest thing to have.
So you would rank them two?
Yeah, I think they are two. I really do. I think they are the second-best team because the one thing I've been impressed with the Saints more than anything this year has been their toughness – And the way they've won different games in different styles. I mean, yesterday they've won from behind. They've won with the lead. They've won playing close. They've won every way you can play. And I think they've demonstrated to me they've got mental toughness that I didn't think they had at one time.
And, you know, you talk about that, and then you see the reverse. You look at what the Houston Texans have done this year. You know,
yeah.
That's a team that doesn't know how to win close games and doesn't know how to take care of business in the last 6 minutes. The Saints are the opposite. And I think you could say the same about the Colts, although yesterday's win was one of the all-time horseshoe up the butt games. That was one of those games that, as a Pats fan, I'm watching. I'm just going, really? Really they're going to win this game? Really? Doing nothing? They should have lost by 14? And it's just, you know, as we saw with the Pats in 01 and 03 and 04, creating your own luck is an actual football skill. It really is.
Yeah, and yesterday they obviously had help. I mean, 6 of their first downs they gain are because of penalties, because they either jump off sides, illegal contact. I mean, when you give your opponent, like the Colts, who are explosive offensively, you give them 6 extra first downs by mental mistakes you make, you deserve to lose.
And they also, you know, they were up. They really could have gone up 14-0, the Colts. And then really from the end of the first quarter on, the Texans dominated that game as much as you can possibly dominate it. And I still will never figure out how they lost that game. Especially,
you know,
how many times can you fumble or not get the ball in first down and goal from the one or second down? Has a team ever run more plays inside the 1 yard line that went terribly wrong? It's like they're on a new record.
Yeah, you know, and the thing that really was the killer was the Colts opened the door wide open at the end of the first half when they refused to acknowledge the clock. And I'm screaming watching the game, just run the ball, because you didn't want to give the Texans the ball back with any chance to come down and give them a little ray of hope.
Yeah.
And so I'm screaming for them to run the ball, yet they don't run it, and then Peyton throws the interception, and they get the 3 points at the end of the half, luckily because they call that stupid timeout that most people do now.
Yeah.
And they give them the second kick, which I still don't understand why people do that. But regardless, they come back, and that 3 points gave them a second set of life, and they kind of rejuvenated them, and they got, oh, my God, I think we can actually win this game.
I am going to be very, very, very surprised next week if the Patriots don't either win that game or it's a situation where they should have won the game and they totally blew it. Because right now, I just don't think, from a talent standpoint, I think the Pats have more talent right now. They're healthier, they look better, and I just think they should be able to go into that game and win it.
You look at all the stats in the league, and, you know, certainly it's not a stat league, but, I mean, the Pats are in the top 5 in almost every category.
Yeah.
And they play smart, and they understand how to win. You know, they play the Dolphins yesterday, and the Dolphins decided to play man-to-man on Randy Moss. Now, I don't know whose idea that was, but that's not how, you know, that was going to work out. And you knew the Patriots were going to make Chad Henne have to have a sensational game, which he played really well, but not good enough for them to win. And that's why they're so good. They're going to do something in the game to take away. Either going to make Joseph Addai beat them, or Austin Collie's going to have to beat them. But you know Reggie Wayne's not going to be the guy trying to beat them.
And also with the Pats defensively, you know, I don't know where these guys in the secondary came from, but McGowan's like a playmaker now. I don't know. Yeah, that McGowan, guy was on the waiver wire. I don't know how that happens.
Right. He came from Chicago, which obviously the Monsters of the Midway no longer exist. That might be – that defense replaces Clancy for the worst defense I've seen this year. Clearly eases right into it. Clancy Pendergrass. It makes it very simple. Now, just going back, having a Clancy moment here, we ought to just at least know that of the eight games that the Kansas City Chiefs have played, six of them they've allowed over 400 yards of offense.
Wow.
Just an FYI.
That's, and, you know, they had one of the great covers ever yesterday, 24-6, 3 minutes left, and somehow they go touchdown, onside touchdown. Well, you're the master of clock management other than myself. I would say you're the clock management guru. I'm more of I don't know what I am, the clock management
the court. Common sense guru.
I'm the clock management court jester, and you're more the clock management guru. What Andy Reid did last night between the challenges and... You know, first of all, when he sent Akers in to kick that field goal to cut it from 7-4 when he has no timeouts left with 4 minutes left, what was your reaction?
At some point, I just look at the – I was actually watching it by myself, but I just wonder when people are going to realize this is the all-time worst game manager of anybody who's won 100 games. And I ask the question all the time, how has he won 100 games managing the clock like this?
It's unbelievable. In fact – that was the first time I've ever seen somebody make like a major decision in a football game. That was the third decision I would have made. Like if you said, if I had a fantasy draft of what my choices were there, like number one, I think would have been to try to punt. I mean, number one would have been to go for it, obviously. Number two would have been, all right, try to punt it and pin him inside the 10 and maybe get a stop and you get the ball back in the 50. Number three would have been kicking a field goal. Because first of all, what are the odds that Akers was going to make it? Like 15%? And then that gives them the ball, the midfield, game over. Even if he makes it, where does that take you? You haven't stopped them really the whole game. All they need is one first down and they win the game. I just thought, and then it's like to not even onside it, to kick it deep. Like you kick it deep and you're announcing that you think your defense can stop their offense and get the ball back. I don't think so, Andy.
It's like Wade Phillips took over the headset from Andy, and he started calling it from the Cowboys' perspective. That's how I was watching it. It's like they actually had interference, and Wade was telling the Eagle coaches what to do in a disguised voice, because it's the only logical way you can look at it.
But how can he be that bad? I mean, he's coached, as you said, he's won 100 games. How do you not get better at this?
How do you not, you know, I wrote 2 weeks ago he should outsource it to India. They should pick up the phone and call India and have them outsource it. I mean, this just makes no sense. I mean, the guy is a disaster when it comes to it, and he's so stubborn, and nobody will tell him that he's wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, he just, like you said, I mean, of all the decisions, I mean, Monty Hall gives you better options when you're on Let's Make a Deal than he made.
And
I mean, really, it's ridiculous.
You know, I even got a feeling when I had my signing in Philly and people were like, you know, keep it up, giving Andy crap and stuff like that. And it just seems to me like the Philly fans – with this McNabb Reed combo are just ready for a fresh start, and you can change the QB or the coach or change both, whatever. But you know, I was getting emails yesterday as that last drive was going where they settled on the Akers field goal. And I was getting tweets too. I was looking at them from people saying, I don't know who is going to screw this up. I don't know whether it's going to be McNabb or Reed, but one of them will, and we're going to lose this game. I mean, that's the mentality that's set in with this fan base. I at some point you just got to start over, I think.
Well, I think clearly the permutations going through the whole city of Philadelphia is Andy Reid can't win close games. And it goes back to the Super Bowl against the Patriots and every decision he makes in these close games. And the thing that's really remarkable is the fact he's not even calling offense or defense. His job is to manage the game. The play calling duties have been turned over to Marty Morningwick. And, you know, but look, he makes these, he's won 100 games. And the two losses he's had this season have been left with us thinking, how does he call a timeout with 2:02 to go on the clock?
That's that was a classic.
These are just like, how do you make $5 million a year and make these decisions? I mean, you know, if it was Wall Street, people would be going berserk.
When he sent Akers out, I was watching with my dad, and I was like, oh, the old fake the field goal, but then take the 5-yard penalty and then punt it. Like, it's just clearly that was what's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, they're snapping the ball. And we were like, whoa, 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 what's going on here? It's just, it's, I don't know. I mean, thank God for him because it's great for my column. I love when people do dumb things. What's better?
Well, he makes it a lot easier for me to, I mean, and you take the Patriot game. Now, that's another one where the Patriots, even though, okay, so hometown clock operator, maybe there shouldn't have been a second on that clock. I'm not sure of that. Usually you get a hometown clock. Mm. But, I mean, the Miami should have never been in that position. Mm. Miami should have been able to at least make them use their timeout and run the ball so where that they weren't going to give up those 3 points, which are really critical at the end of the half. And you knew as soon as Miami punted the ball back to them at halftime, before the half, they were, the Patriots were at least going to get three.
Are you sold on Dallas?
You know, I wrote today, and I don't trust Dallas.
Me neither.
I mean, I'm impressed that he's 13-0 in the month of November. I'm impressed at some of the things he's done, but I just don't trust him. And, you know, there's something about him I don't trust. Maybe it's those – and look, you and I are having this conversation realizing Wade out-coached Andy in a game. Now,
yeah.
You know, that's got to be said on the record. Now, I don't know if he stole the headsets or what he did or if he understands the frequencies. I'm not sure he can do it, but he actually out-coached him in that game.
You know, they kind of fit my blue chipper thing where you watch Dallas play and maybe you look at the hole and you think, they got Wade Phillips, Romo, not in a big game, can't trust him, and Leonard Davis, they paid him too much. But when you just add up the guys on the team, they do have a lot of big guys now, especially now that Miles Austin has turned into freaking Jerry Rice circa 1985. But it's a team that is talented. Like, they have guys on both sides of the ball who can make plays.
Extremely talented. And, you know, Jay Ratliff is one of the best defensive linemen in the league for a while to go along with DeMarcus Ware. And when DeMarcus Ware can get pressure, and then, you know, the Eagles are insistent upon putting five out and DeMarcus Ware can rush and Jay Ratliff's on an island, you know, it plays into the strength of the Cowboys. I keep waiting for teams to be able, like they did early in the year, to block them and handle it. But they obviously, the Cowboys have enough players, especially that committee of running backs, that make it very difficult. I mean, they are a hard offense to stop when they get it going.
And the other thing is, the way they're built, they didn't have a lot of depth. And if you're not going to have injuries, that's fine. If you're going to have injuries, you're in trouble. But they really haven't been murdered by injuries like some of these other teams. So now we're just starting to see a really good team. I believe in them. I actually, you know, I picked Philly in my column, but then Westbrook went out. He was scratched as DFP. And it was just, I was resigned to the fact Dallas was going to win that game last night. Just kind of knew that's where I was headed. But I think it's going to be... At gunpoint right now, I would say New Orleans-Dallas is a nice possibility, you know? I mean, the Cards, I guess, are the one wild card team where their best game, I think, is better than Dallas's best game. But Warner, every once in a while, just falls apart.
But the one thing I give the Cardinals credit for, and I wrote about this today, is they know who they are.
Yeah.
They have accepted their fate, and I think that's part of being a good team, is you know who you are and you play around it. You know, yesterday they ran the ball. Now, the Bears might be we'll go back to the worst. They're my Cardinals of 08 defensively.
Yeah.
But but the Cardinals, when they get it going, they even ran the ball on the Bears. I mean, so you know that's really making it seem like, oh, my gosh, they can even run the ball now?
Well, now Beanie Wells is starting to feel himself out a little bit, and that's making them a little more interesting, I think. Their upside has gone up.
And then the other thing is you know Wisenhunt's in control of the team because he basically told Anquan Boldin, I don't care if you think you can play or not. You didn't practice. You're not playing. I'm in control of this team.
Yeah.
And we can beat these guys without you. I thought Boldin would be chomping at the bit, which he was, to get on the field just to get numbers against that bad Bears defense. I mean, everybody wants to play against them. I mean, they're like the Washington Capitals against the Globetrotters. You want them, you know?
Well, at some point, somebody's got to take a look toward Lovie, right?
Well, he's got to fire himself. I mean, he's the defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any choices this offseason. He's going to have to go in a meeting with himself and basically demote himself because they're worse on defense than they've ever been. And they're all over. They can't even get lined up correctly.
Well, and then also I think the Cedric Benson thing is just such a colossal misfire on so many different levels. Like, that guy never really got a chance. And I know you were down on him last year, and maybe he was immature and all that stuff, but... What I never understand with these teams, and we see it a lot in the NBA, you know, especially with guys who came in the league early and teams give up on them after 3-4 years, is that you forget that these guys are 23 and 24 years old sometimes that are making the mistakes. Like, think about yourself at age 23 or 24. You know, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to do dumb things occasionally, and people aren't who they end up being, I think, until 26, 27, 28, 29. It's just hard for me to believe that Sed Benson never even got a chance when you watch him play for Cincy.
But when he did play, he was so unimpressive. And I mean, I'm wrong. I blew it on him. I mean, he was just so unimpressive that you just wondered where it was. You know,
did they use him wrong, though? I mean, it can't, you know, because they certainly used Kyle Orton wrong.
You know, it's just, it was one of those things where he just didn't look like athletically he had a burst, or he could accelerate, or he could break tackles. Now he looks like a completely different guy.
But this is a guy who is the best high school running back in the history of Texas since Ricky Williams or whoever was, I forget who the previous guy was, and then was the number two running back ever at University of Texas. Like, clear, it's almost like the Ray Rice thing to me. At some point, if a guy is putting up huge numbers, it's got to translate to the NBA some, or the NFL somehow, right?
No question. Yeah, you would think it would, but for him it was weird. You just never saw it. You think, well, maybe it was just a, you know, and Texas players historically have always underachieved when they come into the league, and it was one of those where you kind of, Benson was just another Texas player that didn't really play up to his level. Whereas when Texas players go later in the draft, they seem to play better. You know, Sean Rogers goes in the second round and he plays much better, and then some guys in the first, and you wonder, geez, that guy doesn't look like a first rounder.
I read a story about him that kind of illuminated to me why he didn't make it in Chicago, other than the fact that I still don't think they used him correctly. But, you know, he shows up. He's a top five pick. He holds out. That's always bad sign number one, you hold out. Thomas Jones is already there. He's running really well. He's better than people think. The team's better with Thomas Jones. So now he's top five pick, not playing that much. Confidence goes down. He's upset. He doesn't handle it that great because he's been number one everywhere he's gone his whole life. Coach doesn't totally believe in him. When they use him, they don't use him correctly, and it kind of snowballs. And, you know, reading about it made me think, if I'm a GM, these are the guys I would be looking for. And not just guys who have failed, but have failed for reasons that maybe didn't have to do with talent. When you were a GM, did you try to judge the circumstances as much as the talent, or how did you do that?
Well, I think you definitely did. I mean, that's ultimately why we signed Vinny Testaverde in Cleveland back in the 90s, because we thought maybe it was just a circumstance. He's a top 10 player, and if we could get him managed correctly and know about him, you can make him better. And I think ultimately that's what you try to do a lot of these guys in the league. And Benson, you know, running backs, usually they show up pretty quickly, you know.
Yeah.
But I think your point's well taken. You know, he didn't know how to handle but not being the player. And then that manifested itself into some off-the-field immaturity issues, which put a black eye on the franchise, which made it a lot easier for everybody to say, hey, let's just get rid of this guy. And that became the path of least resistance, and so you took it. And that's the urge you have to fight. Whereas conversely, the other sense is where the Raiders just refuse to give up on a guy, even though when it looks like the guy can't play. And then they keep hanging on, act in a sense of desperation.
Because it's embarrassing to get rid of him.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's the key to success is to know when to get rid of a guy and when to keep a guy. And I think New England does a marvelous job with that. And there's a lot. Pittsburgh usually does it. Usually when Pittsburgh lets a guy go, for the most part. Now, you know, Plexico was a guy they let go that went on to have success, but there were some problems with Plex. And Joey Porter's had some since he left, but few and far between when Pittsburgh lets him go.
And same for the Pats, I would say. Very rarely has a guy left the Pats and come back to totally haunt them. You look at like David Gibbons, David Patton, even
Deion Branch. You know, that was one that they're still laughing at.
Yeah, but except that cost us the Super Bowl. I will never be able to be talked out of that one. He gets open on that 3rd-and-3. We got a number one for him, but we ended up running that 3rd-and-3 for Troy Brown, who was out of the league in 5 months. And that's it. We win the Colts game. We win the Super Bowl. It's over. So I don't know. That's a tough one for me. But Deion definitely. I mean, Belichick just stuck to his guns. You are worth this. I'm not paying you more than this. He did it with Vinatieri, and almost every time it's worked out. Like I don't know if you saw Gostkowski yesterday, but he was unbelievable. Like who would have thought that would be an upgrade from Vinatieri? But he basically with his kickoffs and everything, he is. But to
he
be
took
fair, like
out of it.
For every said Benson though, there are guys that teams do that whole circumstance. Like I remember we brought in Jonathan O'Sullivan. Was that his name?
The defensive tackle was drafted by the Saints.
Like a top eight
from Georgia. Yeah.
Yeah, top eight draft pick, and they brought him in, and the whole mindset was maybe New Orleans, they didn't coach him right, or maybe they used him wrong. Let's see. And then within a week, they were like, oh, yeah, this guy stinks.
that relates to work ethic.
Yeah.
Usually it relates to work ethic. And that's what Benson's problem was, too. He was never really in shape. He finally got himself in shape, and, you know, look, and he showed the talent that he ended up being. Clearly displayed, but there's often times where these guys that don't really have the urge to wake up, and that's where you got to give Benson a ton of credit, because he got his career and his life back in order, And now he's now look at him. He's the first back since Jerome Bettis to gain 100 yards in the same season against the Ravens, which we all know the Ravens' defense is a joke. I mean, are you going to watch Ray Lewis do the dance one more time? At some point when your career is over or you're not as good a player, do you stop doing the dance?
Yeah, I mean, he's arguably been a weak link for them this year. He certainly cost them the first Cincinnati game with the stupid hit on Ocho. You know, if that hit doesn't happen, they win that game. I'm having a tough time figuring out that division in general. I really thought the Ravens offense was just a guaranteed 24 to 34 points a game. And I don't know what happened yesterday. And we were watching the Pats Miami and I had that Bengals game on one of the smaller TVs. So I wasn't carefully watching it and I want to watch the shortcuts on DirecTV. But every time we looked over at that TV, Cincinnati had the ball. It was one of those games where it's like, that's right. I saw Baltimore's punter twice. I don't think I saw them run a play for three quarters. And I don't know how that offense, that could happen.
Well, they had the ball Cincinnati had the ball for 40 minutes. And ultimately, the two corners for Cincinnati are better than the receivers for Baltimore. And that's really how it boils down. And that puts pressure on the Baltimore offensive line, which makes Flacco hold the ball a tad longer, and then Flacco gets sacked. But that thing just manifests itself into problems for Baltimore. And then they couldn't convert on third down, and all of a sudden Cincinnati, which does a great job of rushing the passer, not because they just run up the field, but they control the pass rush, and that ultimately forced Baltimore to make some late throws or hurry throws, and then they just never had the ball. And I'm agreeing with you. Baltimore, to me, has to say, look, we have got to score 25 points on offense every week or else we're not winning.
Or it's a joke that we didn't because we have too much talent not to score that much. But you know what? The reason I picked against Cincinnati last week was because I thought that this would be the game when losing Antoine Odom was going to come back to bite him. And if anything, their pass rush was just as good as if he had been in there. Who are the guys on that Cincinnati defense side are making a difference?
Well, they have a kind of a defensive rotation, and that Pico kid with the long hair in the back of his head, he's a powerful guy inside, and he can push the pocket. And the one thing these guys do is they push the pocket really effectively, and they force the quarterback to not have a lot of alleys to move and run around in. And that's really the only way you're going to play Drew Brees. You're not going to stop Drew Brees because you cover him, because he throws the ball to covered receivers all the time. The only way you're going to stop Drew Brees is you have to find a way to control the pocket and force him to step up in the pocket. And this is what Cincinnati does better than anybody. They're able to control the pocket. They can push the pocket, and then it helps them when they've got some athletes. And Michael Johnson, this kid they picked in the third round from Georgia Tech, he probably got killed by more scouts than anybody because they said he wasn't tough. Son of a Marine, four-year starter at Georgia Tech. He comes in yesterday, has a half a sack, very athletic player. They think he's tough enough in Cincinnati. So he's able to come through, and then Robert Gethers, who led the team in sacks 2 years ago, had been an effective player. So they do a really good job. And then those corners, Leon Hall and Jonathan Joseph, are just two really good cover guys, and they shut down the attack. And then I think Carson Palmer is slowly starting to become Carson Palmer of old, and he's doing it with his footwork. He's moving around the pocket a lot better than I've ever seen him, and he's making better throws, and he's able to get out of some situations. I mean, he beats Cleveland with his feet. He moved on Chicago, and then yesterday he made some plays with his feet, which I thought was really the difference in the game.
And I had forgotten that he had sprained his ankle late in the preseason. So really, the Palmer of the last 3 weeks is probably the Palmer that this is the guy we're going to get. He was really limping around those first few weeks. If you're a Cincy fan, we're heading into week 10. This is starting about week 10 is when now we're going to find out who are the good teams and who are the bad teams. Can you believe in this Cincy team?
Yeah, I do, because I think they're different than any Cincy team. Typically, Cincinnati teams are never very physical, and they almost look like they've spent no time lifting weights. Usually push them around. And this Cincinnati team is the opposite of that. They're physical. They can push you around. They're fairly strong. And with those corners, they can cover. And with the way they rush, they can. And then Benson, obviously playing very well. And now, we're seeing Carson Palmer start to become Carson Palmer old. Now, I think Chris Henry's injury really hurts them.
Yes.
I think that's another one that's going to be tough for them to overcome. But for whatever reason, they just have been very effective offensively, and I think it starts with Carson's ability to make some of these throws that he hadn't made in the last couple of years.
Week 10, to me, is the official start of the NFL season. That is when, the pretenders are separated from the contenders. And more importantly, there's always those one or two teams that peak too early, and you can't peak too early in the NFL. You want to peak at around Thanksgiving, early December. That's when you really want to start cresting. Do you see a team that, in your opinion, will be at another level 6 weeks from now than they are right now?
I think New England, because they have so many players injured.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be a better team down the road. I think they have an opportunity to get some guys back, particularly the running back. If Fred Taylor comes back or Sammy Morris, one of those guys, I think they will be a much better team down the road than they are currently. San Diego seems to me, with Merriman getting two sacks the last 2 weeks, have become a better team. Once they can get some of those offensive linemen back, particularly Nick Hartwick, I think they'll make them a much better team. And you know, after that, the Giants, you know, are the enigma team. They are, you know, they dominate the game yesterday. They look incredibly statistically, and at the end of the day, they can't win the game.
Yeah, so and you know, we found out this is also the time I mentioned teams that make a jump. There's also always one team heading into Week 10 that we've written off and said, oh, yeah, well, they don't have it this year. And then they'll rally. And this actually happened to the Giants 2 years ago. This is
– yeah.
It's very easy to turn your season around and feed off of the whole everybody writing you off thing. Do you think the Giants could be that team?
Yeah, I think they could, because they certainly have enough talent and they have to get their identity back. I think they've lost who they are. I think they really have. And yesterday was a bad example of that, because they dominated the game and then they put the game in their defensive line's hands and said, okay, 2 minute drill, you guys win the game, you rush, you get two sacks, and when this game's over, and they couldn't do it. And San Diego walks out of there with really a win that they had no business getting a win on.
Well, Sims did a nice job.
The half.
Well, I was going to say, Sims did a nice job of pointing out that this is a team built around their defensive line. Why are they doing these crazy blitzes and all that stuff? Isn't this a team that specifically didn't do that stuff?
Yeah, and that's really where you have to worry. Well, teams that give up home runs on their fastball, the team, and that's supposed to be their best pitch, that's the teams you worry about.
Yeah.
And I would be a little bit, you know, that's where but I think they can still have enough ability to turn their season around. I think they really are. There's enough talent there. Baltimore, I just don't see their problems inherently defensively. They can't cover anybody. They're bad. Unless they just go on a scoring binge and they become the, you know, just decide they're just going to score, I don't see them doing it. And the Jets, I just think the Jets are an 8-8 team.
Yeah,
because
I
they
agree.
Have a rookie head coach, a rookie quarterback. They got some injuries that they can't really overcome, and I think there's going to be too many ups and downs in their season. So I don't see them as a 4-4 team coming back. Chicago is one of the worst. We talked about their defense, and Green Bay can't block anybody. I mean, you and I might be able to get a sack against Green Bay's offensive line.
There's no chance Tennessee goes 10-6, right?
I don't. Tennessee's finally playing Tennessee football.
They look good. You know, Vince has really opened it up for them, I got to say.
You know, Chris Johnson is really like, when you watch Chris Johnson play, he's like watching a high school player.
Yeah.
Because he makes some incredible runs that you say he can't be that much more talented than everybody else on the field, and he does. I mean, he really is. He's remarkable in his balance and his ability to accelerate, and he just keeps getting better and better.
Packers, we can write off.
Well, unless they can fix that offensive line, you know. I told Rich Eisen yesterday, if I was Ted Thompson, I'd have Clemenza start the car when I got home, because I would be worried. Because it's scary. I mean, you know, they can't block anybody. I mean, they've given up more sacks already this year than they gave all of last year, and it doesn't look like it's going to be any better than hoping. I mean, I know everybody says Aaron Rodgers hangs on the ball too long, but and then defensively, you know, they didn't get a sack against Brett Favre, and that's why Dom Capers was brought in to handle that. You know, Greg Williams was brought in to help the New Orleans defense. Dom Capers was brought in to help the Green Bay defense, and I think there's been a disparity in both. And, you know, obviously Williams has, and Capers, for whatever reason, hasn't been able to get that done.
So are we sure Dom Capers is good? Is there evidence?
Well, you know,
what is the evidence that he's good?
You know, it's like one coach in the NFL told me, I'm playing with a lot of guys that used to be good. Their names are good, but they're not good anymore. So certainly something to consider.
Yeah, well, I will say, as a counterpoint to your Aaron Rodgers point, saying that he holds the ball on too long is like saying that Andy Reid struggles with clock management decisions. He holds the ball so long that it's almost like you feel like he's trying to win some sort of contest for how long he can actually hold on to the ball before he throws it. I think he's the most overrated guy this year. I think ultimately those kill you. The one thing you can't do is hold out to the ball long, especially when your offensive line can't block for you. I don't know. I think he's lost games for them because of that. I know he makes some good throws, but ultimately that is not a guy I want to go to war with. Anyway.
But it's hard to win in this league without tackles.
It is. But if you don't have tackles, throw the ball. Get rid of it. Dump it out. You're going to get hit. You don't have an offensive line. All right, so your Super Bowl is Indianapolis, New Orleans. at gunpoint.
I think that's what it looks like for me right now. You know, Minnesota certainly, you know, that it could be the first dome, you know, could be two dome teams playing in the conference championship game, you know, with going back to Atlanta when Atlanta played Minnesota up there. But I there's something about Minnesota I think you can throw the football on them. And so if they played New Orleans, I think New Orleans would move it on.
Yeah. The New Orleans-Minnesota NFC title game, that could potentially happen in a dome and be the over-under would be, I think, 55.5. That could be one of the great playoff games we've ever watched. I'm really rooting for that. And two really good fan bases that both of, you know, two fan bases that deserve to go to a Super Bowl and have been waiting for it forever and ever. And I just think that would be great. I think that one game could top anything else that happens this year.
That would be fun to watch. Obviously, you know what will happen. It'll probably be a 6-3 game.
Well, imagine Sunday. You have Pats Indy battling for Team of the Decade or Pats Steelers or however that works, whatever combination. It's going to be really hard to screw up the AFC title game. It's going to be good no matter what the combination is.
No, and next week it's really a good, you know, next week you've got, you know, the 1 o'clock, you got Pittsburgh-Cincinnati, which is a great, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
That's going to be a great game. And then, of course, everybody's probably going to just can't wait to watch Kansas City-Oakland. You know, that's going to be one that's spellbinding.
A classic.
A classic, you know, like any other. And then we get to watch Andy go out to San Diego and take his team on the West Coast, which he's typically a disaster.
Oh, Andy versus Norv.
Yes.
Wow. Oh, you're right. What a week. What a weekend. I'm excited. I'm giddy.
There's some good, and of course, the Minnesota comes off the bye to get Detroit.
Oh, yeah. That could be I haven't done Lions with Sal yet, but I'm guessing that's going to be above 17. All right, Mike Lombardi, anything you want to plug?
Now, this NFL Network Showtime on Inside the NFL with our guys, which we got to get you on that show. You know, the producer, he wants you badly on there. Pete Radovich wants you bad.
Listen,
it's going to be a full-court press to get
dicey.
You on that show. We could have you on right after John Riggins.
Riggo. We finally met 2 weeks ago. Somehow we had never met, and I was surprised by just what a handsome and strapping guy you are.
Oh, yeah, thanks a lot, yeah. I was really impressed with how behaved those Philly people were. And
it was great.
You know, they were incredible, weren't they?
They're in such a good mood now, and I caught them right before the Yankee World Series, and they were just in awesome spirits. It was so different than 05. I think after the World Series and with what's happening with Andy Reid, I think that might change a little bit over these cold months.
And the three people go to 76er games, so there's no sense in watching basketball. But, you know, it was funny because when I came upstairs, I went to the coffee shop before I came up because I had to send something, and I asked this girl sitting down there, and she had her note. She was reading the book. I said, is the man up there? Oh, yeah, she was so happy. I mean, it was incredible. It was really incredible. I mean,
you know, it was sad.
And then you're on my favorite show of all time. I mean, that was like the trifecta. I hit the trifecta when you went on Morning Joe. I mean, it was whoa.
You know what was sad about the Philly signing was the fact that it was a signing for an NBA book and three people had 76ers t-shirts on or jerseys out of like 600 people or something. It was like, wow, nobody cares.
They were the only three that went and watched against the Nets the other night where they had to squeeze a win out, you know?
That team, they put it this way, guys are available on that team. You can have Sam Dallenbear, you can have Elton Brand, you can have anybody you want to have on that team.
Yeah, I think that's right. You could probably, but the only teams that would take it would be the Italian teams.
Yeah,
that's the
true.
Problem.
It's some overseas. All right, Mike Lombardi, it's always a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Bill.
All right, now let's go to another one of our favorites. Yeah, I don't think he's been on in a while, but he's a guy who runs footballoutsiders.com, an old friend of ours, Aaron Schatz. You're on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. What's happening?
Hey, yes, have not been on since the preseason, I believe. So
that's
lots
not
of football
true.
Gone
Is that
by.
True?
Yeah.
Is that true?
I think so.
Oh, this book tour has killed me. It's killed all my common sense. So I just had Mike Lombardi on, and we were talking. I asked him the question I'm about to ask you. At gunpoint, if your life depended on it and you had to pick one team to win the Super Bowl, who would that team be?
Indianapolis.
Wow, that's what he said. Yeah, I don't say, man, I just think they're banged up.
They are banged up. They'll get healthier by the time the Super Bowl comes around.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning is just, he's a force of nature at this point.
Yes, yes.
I mean, they're not number one in our ratings. The Patriots are actually number one in our ratings right now.
That's
we have the Colts fourth.
I'm not surprised. The Pats are in like the top five in almost every category, right?
Yeah. I mean, in our ratings, they're seventh in defense, tenth in special teams, first in offense, higher than New Orleans. So the thing about the Saints is that, see, I kind of believe, I guess, a little bit in the Colts defense more than I believe in the Saints defense. They really do have problems stopping the run.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a point this week where Carolina ran one of those give-up draws on third and long, third and 12, and D'Angelo Williams got it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I guess if you think a little bit more about just how many injuries Indianapolis has, that maybe that's a little bit too much of a sudden, answer. What is Malcolm Gladwell and Blink would say, that's probably the best way to pick a Super Bowl team, right?
You got to stick with your first instinct.
But, you forget that, Sanders is gone for the year at this point. Marlon Jackson is gone for the year at this point. Gonzalez is probably gone for the year at this point. But the offensive line is still healthy, and that's a huge, thing. The reason why they had problems at the beginning of last year was they had that young center in there who didn't know what to do with all of Peyton Manning's chicken dance nonsense. And Saturday does. So, it's you don't want to pick just one team because you know the way the NFL is, especially the last couple of years, man. You go into the playoffs and the team that looks the worst going in the playoffs could go on a little hot streak. But, I mean, the Colts look pretty darn good. So
we just talked about that, about this is now we're heading into Week 10. This is the time when there's always that one team that either looks like they're down in their luck or they don't have it, and then all of a sudden that team puts it together down the stretch and gets hot. According to your extensive statistical rankings, do you have a target for that team this year?
Well, I'll tell you which team has the easiest schedule for the rest of the year by our numbers.
Okay.
Green Bay.
Ooh. Interesting.
Now, look, after what happened this week, you don't want to say they'll do anything good.
Yeah, true.
But look at the rest of their schedule after next week. I mean, they play Dallas, yes, but then San Francisco, Detroit. Okay, Baltimore, that's tough. Chicago, schizophrenic. Pittsburgh, tough. Seattle, Arizona, not only schizophrenic, but that's the last week they could have their division sewn up by then.
Mm.
So, emotionally, if you ask me what team that's been struggling would have the most, would be most likely to suddenly turn it around, I'd say the Giants.
Agreed.
I mean, these losses they've had have been primarily, they haven't really been crushed, and they've been losing to good teams.
Yep.
And that's still a good team, and everything that you liked about that team before the season is still there, except for whatever the heck is wrong with Brandon Jacobs right now.
And we've seen this happen in football sometimes where the team that's been on top for a while, they need to take a couple haymakers, they need to have everybody write them off, and then they need to get fired up that everybody wrote them off, and then all of a sudden nobody believed in us. And then
it reminds me of the 2005 Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
Who, of course, had gone 15-1 the year before but didn't win the Super Bowl because the Patriots beat them in the playoffs. And they went 11-5, and they had some losses at midseason, particularly that game that Tommy Maddox played quarterback and just handed the ball to Jacksonville. But by the time you got to the end, they were back in the saddle, and then they ran through the playoffs.
Right. And for people who aren't that familiar with your site, and how can you not be, you have a variety of ways to measure which teams are either more effective than maybe their record shows and which teams are a little less effective. Is there a team, in your opinion, that their record belies how effective they've been?
Well, I mean, the best team with a losing record by our ratings is easily Miami.
Yep.
Okay. Before the Monday Night Football game between Denver and Pittsburgh, at least, they're 12th at 3-5, and no other team with a losing record is better than 21st.
Yeah.
Now, we also have Baltimore 5th at 4-4.
Oh.
Although they're in a pretty tight, it's a little tight little pack there from 5th to 8th with Baltimore, Dallas, Denver, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Baltimore's losses have been primarily to good teams, and they've been close. You know, poor Steven Hauschka is on a short rope, the kicker.
Yeah, but it's funny how that one position seems to submarine one team a year, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is just, listen, field goal kicking is very random, okay?
Yeah.
Even the best field goal kickers have bad years when you least expect it. And so, of course, that's going to just submarine some team because some kicker is just going to randomly go through a little slump and, you can't predict it, unlike, you know, something like kickoff distance. Kickoff distance is amazingly consistent. You know, Steve Gostkowski booms the kickoffs. He'll boom them every year. Olindo Mare, same thing.
Yeah. So I'm kind of with you on Miami because I've watched, for some reason, I've watched a lot of their games. They definitely should have beaten the Saints. That was a game they gave away. You could make a case that one break goes their way in that Pats game yesterday. They win that one.
Yeah, but that's a conventional kind of 10-point loss. Most 10-point losses, there are points in the game where if something had gone your way,
they never got that one break. But they played, I thought they played as well as
they were outplayed by the Patriots, but the Patriots are the number one team in the league by my ratings. To be outplayed by the number one team on their field is really not something to be ashamed of.
But that was my point, was that they played, I feel like, they played as well as they could play. And they just got beat because the other team played better and didn't make any mistakes.
Because they're starting two rookie corners.
Yeah. But that game, in a weird way, gave me confidence that maybe that team sneaks into the sixth spot.
I think, unfortunately, that they're not going to sneak into a playoff spot, Miami, because I think...
Because you need 10 wins? 11?
Because I think you probably will need 11. I mean, they've got Baltimore ahead of them, which they're not only, you know, Baltimore is an even better, you know, team that's better than their record choice, but they don't have a losing record, but, you know, if some team's going to sneak into that last spot, I think it's more likely to be Baltimore.
Or possibly San Diego is a...
Yeah, San Diego's 5-3. They're lower in my ratings, but we all know they've got so much talent, and we thought they were going to be amazing this year. And I got to tell you, if North Turner doesn't get fired after this year, I don't know what the guy's got to do, because that team is so underwhelming, so not playing up to its talent, with the exception of Phillip Rivers and Vincent Jackson. Guys are just not playing up to their talent.
Yeah, but are we sure Tomlinson's even remotely good anymore?
No, I do think Tomlinson seems to be toast. He seems to have become toast faster than I expected.
Faster than Michael Vick became toast?
Who knows? Look, Vick, you know, I'll talk about this till the cows come home. Vick was not that good to begin with.
Yep.
And then they're not even using him in a standard quarterback situation, so you couldn't even really judge how important he is or how good he is. The Michael Vick comeback hasn't even really happened. It'll happen if he signs with a team and actually starts a quarterback for a few weeks, but that won't even happen until next year if it happens at all.
Have you guys, I've written about this before, but have you guys ever done the definitive study on athletic quarterbacks once they hit like 29, 30, 31 and what happens to them? Because it just seems like most of the time it's not.
I wouldn't say definitive study, but there's no question that these guys, the rushing yards go down. I mean, there are exceptions.
Yeah.
You know, Doug Flutie is a really strong exception.
Oh, he's an exception to everything, though.
But you know, even the guys who stay mobile, they get fewer yards. They don't take off quite as much. You know, Steve Young didn't run quite as much. Jeff Garcia didn't run quite as much. McNair's mobility went away. McNabb's mobility has gone away. So, yeah, I mean, that's the problem with Michael Vick. That's what I said last year when he got out of jail. The problem is you have a guy who never really could pass that well, whose strength is about to disappear.
It would seem like as you head into your 30s, accuracy would be the number one trait you want. Like, I feel like Peyton Manning could play until he's 75.
Honestly, when you're 20, I think accuracy is the number one trait that you want. It's
but you can hide mistakes.
Just ask any Raiders fan how underrated accuracy is as a quarterback skill.
Okay? But you can hide a lot of sins if you can run around and get first downs with your legs, which you're not going to be able to do when you're 33 years old.
Right.
Yeah. Are you surprised by Vince Young?
A little bit. I mean, you know, it hasn't really been against the best competition, and he hasn't put up the greatest numbers. I actually was talking to Michael Smith yesterday at the Patriots game, and he said he'd actually, you know, he does the kind of insidery things I don't do, like actually talk to players.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he's talked to Vince Young, and he thinks Vince gets it now, that Vince is humbled by what's happened the whole last year, and he thinks that he'll put in the time. And a big deal with him was always that he wasn't putting in the time that's required to be an NFL quarterback, because he thought he was kind of a little bit of a rock star. So if he really is willing to put in the time, I mean, the talent is there, but you certainly haven't learned anything after two games.
Well, the one thing we have learned is that it does seem like he has his mojo back compared to where it was. So you could see it in the game yesterday with the way he was interacting with teammates near the end and the celebration stuff.
By mojo, you mean Chris Johnson?
Well, that too. It also helps to have a guy who can break 90-yard runs anytime he wants to. Seemingly. Is he on pace to have one of the greatest seasons you've measured?
I don't know about the greatest seasons we've measured. It certainly is. It's going to be up there with some of Barry Sanders' seasons as the greatest boom and bust. He is number one in rushing value after this week in our ratings.
Mm-hmm.
But in success rate, So in other words, the percentage of his runs that get a certain number of yards towards the first down, he's 22nd.
Gotcha.
It's just his good runs are so good, and they're more common than most guys of this type, that it makes up for all those zeros and losses.
Could Sanders
and the
catch
only
the
guy,
ball?
I mean, you know, the only guy I can think of who was really like that earlier, who was this good, was Barry Sanders.
Well, I can't remember because I'm old. Could Sanders catch the ball like Chris Johnson could? I don't remember
I don't think he was the receiver. Yeah. But then running backs were not used in the passing game quite as much at that point, unless you were a specifically West Coast offense.
So you don't think the Titans can go 10-6, right?
We
can.
No. Okay, no, I don't think the Titans can go 10-6.
What
I mean,
a story.
It's nice to see them playing a little bit better. Part of it is, you know, that they have more health in their secondary now. They're not starting like random rookies.
Mm. Is there a bad team or a quote bad team, unquote, that you feel like actually might be a nice play for those of us who actually pick NFL games every week? And
Seattle.
I
mean, Miami is 3-5, but no one thinks of them as a bad team, right?
Right.
The Jets are 4-4, but no one thinks of them as a bad team.
Are they a good team, though?
No, they're a mediocre team.
Yeah, they're mediocre. But
Seattle is a 3-5 mediocre team in a division that no one wants to win, where the team that we all think is good is schizophrenic.
Yeah.
Being Arizona, who certainly are playing better than they did earlier this year, and better than they did last year until the playoffs. But, you know, still is a team that you can sneak up on. I mean, Arizona leads that division, but they're 5-3. So Seattle, you know, could be in waiting if they can just keep Matt Hasselbeck upright.
Arizona reminds me of San Diego in that, you know, obviously you can't believe in them, but they can have those games where they're just going to move the ball and score and throw deep and do things.
I think it's more with them, though. I think it's more about their lack of balance, that they have no running game at all. And on defense, their pass defense is so based on cornerbacks, especially Rogers Cromartie, who is a real gambler type who could make great plays but then just gets completely lost sometimes. And that leads to that kind of inconsistency. I mean, maybe this is just my subjective personal opinions of who I like in the NFL, but I don't think it's a coaching thing with Arizona like it is with San Diego.
Or even Philly. Are your rankings pointing to anything saying a team 5-3 or above, just in blinking capital letters, fraud, fraud, fraud?
Well, it was Chicago before this week.
Mm.
Chicago is 25th in our rankings despite being 4-4.
Hmm.
And they were that low. They were 23rd last week at 4-3.
Yeah, I picked Arizona.
Everything was set up for Arizona to just spank them.
Yeah, that was a weird line. And it's also, when you look at that line and Arizona's giving 3 in Chicago, it's kind of a red flag. Because on face value, before you do any research or anything, be like, boy, that's a weird line. Why
okay,
is there
so maybe on December 20th, but
right.
It's not that cold right now. And
right.
To be honest, I think what we really are learning this year, we're really learning even more than we have in past years, that as much as quarterback is the most important position in the game, it is a team game, and quarterback is dependent on your teammates and your scheme and your coaching, like every other position in football. Maybe not quite as much as running back, but a lot. If you look at what Orton is doing compared to Cutler, if you look at what's happened to Matt Castle after going to Kansas City, I mean, quarterbacks are fabulous. They're important. They're the most important players in the game, but they may not be quite as important as we think, with the possible exception of Manning, only because, let's all be honest, he's actually the offensive coordinator for that team.
Right. Well, I would put Breeze in that category, too.
And Brady, I mean, not that Breeze and Brady aren't awesome, but I mean, like, if Jim Sorkey comes in, I don't know who calls plays.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you say Manning's the offensive coordinator. I think he's the coach of the whole team.
He probably is the coach of the whole team.
I want to see Jim Caldwell blink before I believe he's coaching. I don't even – I think they CGI when he throws the red flag.
But
I don't think he moves.
I mean, the fact is that Castle comes in last year. The team goes 11-5 because they've got a lot of other pieces working. He goes to Kansas City. All of a sudden, he's terrible. Well, he's not terrible. It's that the team around him is terrible. It's not that Cutler's bad. It's that he's stuck with that they can't block. Orlando Pace is completely toast. Matt Forte, I don't know what's the deal this year with him. Some of that is line blocking, but some of it is his own problem. So now Cutler's, you know, in a bad situation, and that's leading him to push and do all the things he shouldn't do and make bad decisions. Not to mention the guy just gets really hyper. I think he's a psychologist to just chill him out a little bit.
Well, the good news is they don't have a first-round pick next year.
I mean, it's really – I mean, the funniest news about this is that, you know, before the season when we all thought Denver was going to be awful, and I thought Denver really was going to be awful, you actually called that one, right? I mean, you thought Denver would be good.
One of my rare beauties, yeah.
But, we're saying they made a terrible decision to trade their first-round pick to Seattle for that cornerback who's not playing very well, whose name I don't remember right now, Alfonso, I think, something.
Yeah.
Anyway, the fact is that they lost their own first-round pick, but they gained Chicago's, and that's a way better pick.
Right.
I mean, Seattle still is in a nice situation to have that extra first-round pick, but Denver actually has a pretty good first-round pick because they'll have Chicago's.
Well, Carolina doesn't have their first-round pick, which I don't know is a commonly known thing, but that could be like a what?
That was a Philly. They gave it to Philly, I believe.
Yeah. God, Philly is just, they run the gamut of everything. They have great trades,
bad coaching.
Philly is an
amazingly well-managed team.
That self-destructs in an enormous amount of
Andy Reid has some very specific problems that seem to creep up over and over again.
Unbelievable.
But he also, the fact is that the way that that team has been competitive for so long is a testament to the fact that he is a good coach with specific weaknesses that come out at really bad times. And it's a very well-run, well-managed team that knows how to play the salary cap.
Yeah.
So you got to give them credit for that. And the fact is, they've been pretty good this year on short yardage, which is normally their problem. It's just last night that they had the problem that they were struggling.
Well, the Raiders game was not a work of art either.
No, but that wasn't an issue of short yardage. That was an issue of, like, all around just combined with some bad luck, combined with missed field goals.
I'd go crazy if he was my coach. I really think I'd be in an insane asylum at this point. With all
well,
the,
one of our writers, weird. Mike, one of our writers, Mike Tanier, is a longtime Philly fan. You know, grew up in South Jersey, and his opinion of Andy Reid is different than mine.
Must be going bonkers. I wouldn't be able to handle it when he brought in Akers.
It's tough. What was up with that field goal? What was the point of that?
I said to Lombardi, who came on before you, that that would have been my third choice. My first choice would have been to go for it. Second choice would have been to punt. And field goal was really the last possible option there.
My first thought was actually, oh, this is good. He's going to do the pooch punt.
Right.
He's going to fool them, and Akers is going to pooch it. Because that field goal, not only does that field goal not really get you much, but it's so far away. I understand maybe taking that field goal if it is, say, fourth and goal on the 15.
Yep.
Okay, that's a pretty almost, assured field goal. Getting the conversion would be really difficult. Okay, you might as well get the 3 points, and that way if you manage to come back, you get a win instead of a tie. But otherwise, what is the point?
Give us one thing that we don't know that you guys have figured out through your various engines.
Jason Campbell is, at worst, a league-average quarterback. And he will go somewhere in free agency, and if he goes somewhere that has an actual offensive line and some pieces around him, he will probably shock people.
Oh, I like that one. I have not heard that yet.
He has career highs this year in completion percentage and yards per attempt. He has never had a year by our stats where he's been below replacement level. By our stats, he's been better than Cutler this year. And you have, obviously, a lot of this has to do with teammates and scheme and coaching. But, geez, is he doing well with teammates, scheme, and coaching? I don't think he's really lucked out on those things right now. I mean, that guy has been put through the ringer, and the fact that he's become a bit of a scapegoat for Washington fans is really not fair to him.
Good way to end. I like that one. Jason Campbell, you've made me reevaluate everything I know about him. Aaron Schatz, footballoutsiders.com. Always a pleasure.
Let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming up.
You got it.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
You laughed. You cried. You turned up the sound repeatedly, and now it's all over. Thus concludes another installment of the BS Report. And with all this talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just breaking news.
The $5 footlong anthem rolls on with Subway Everyday Value. So many of your Subway favorites are $5 footlongs, like the Tastetacular Spicy Italian $5 footlong and the Pile Ridiculously High BLT $5 footlong, both made to your order on the freshly baked bread of your choice.